This episode is brought to you by The Great Grow Along. Sign up at greatgrowalong.com.
So welcome to another episode of Item 13. This week we have with us Tina Munsu, who is a nurse and wellness blogger. Really, truly pushing delicious, healthy meals through her blog and Instagram account, which is how I found her. Welcome to the show, Tina. Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you too, especially like it's the new year. Everyone's doing new year, new me. So we're going to talk about that from the perspective of healthy eating and all of that. And also in the context of like a little bit in the context of West African Cameroonian food. Okay. So first we want to know a little bit about you. Who is Tina?
Who is Tina? Big question.
I know.
I'm still trying to figure that out myself. Yeah. But so far what I'm working with is, you know, I am a nurse. Primarily I am a diabetes focused disease management nurse, and I also dabble in the world of nutrition and blogging. And so I blog at Well and Tasty, where I share, you know, fun, easy meals that you can whip up in under 30 minutes an hour, because we're not trying to spend that much time in the kitchen. And so my, you know, I'm very excited about food. I'm a true foodie. And so that's pretty much what keeps me going.
Yeah, I am
Cameroonian.
Okay.
I am Cameroonian. So born and raised in Cameroon, got to the U.S. in 2001. And I am currently based in New York, where I went to a little bit of high school and then did my college years here in New York and started working professionally as a registered nurse. So that's pretty me simply.
I love New York. Like I always, I lived in New York too for a little bit after business school. And it just stuck with, like, it's always one of those things where you're like, oh, it's going to be this crazy, busy, you know, like, because when you think of New York, I think people think of Times Square automatically.
Yeah.
But once I got to live there, like, and I'm a natural introvert too. So all that stimulation for me, I was like, oh, I really wasn't looking forward to it. But then I loved it. I think once you find your people, once you find your spaces, New York can be an incredibly great place to live.
For sure. That's the thing with New York. It's one of those places that you either really love it or you can't wait to get out of it. I don't think there's like a really in between.
Right.
You either really love it and love the hustle and love the loudness and love the idea of, you know, meeting someone from a different part of the world every block you walk along. Or you're just terrified and you're just like, I cannot believe I'm paying so much to live in a little box with no space. I can't even have closet space. Like, you know, every time I go out of New York, I'm always amazed by how much people get out, you know, with whatever money
with
they
space,
have.
Yeah, for sure. It's it's a double-edged sword. Like, I don't know. Every time I go back, though, it's a double-edged sword for sure. All right.
Yeah.
So I was telling you before we got online that I particularly was drawn to your site maybe a couple of years ago because of, one, your meal prep. A lot of the meal prep things I saw on your site. And also because it featured West African food. So, like, at the time, I didn't know it was, you know, you were Cameroonian specifically, but I saw familiar ingredients, let's just say, that I thought, oh, and then in true, I don't know, human fashion, like, I bookmark stuff. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And then it never happened. So we'll talk about your tips, essentially. But one, like, how did you get into meal prepping for one? Like, what was the impetus to get into that?
So I think for me, meal prepping has always been like a gateway to achieving the kind of wellness goals that I set for myself. But I think before that, so I used to work at this job where I coordinated an asthma program, but it was in like inner city, New York City, where you turn around and all you have is what we call bodegas, little stores. And liquor stores. So like there was very little food. It was all fast food. And initially I was like, oh yeah, you know, I can get Chinese today. I can, like, you know, I was fine eating out.
Yeah.
But after doing that for about 2 weeks, I started noticing how sluggish I was getting. And being a nurse, I was like, you know, I cannot keep doing this. I can already feel like, I felt like my arteries were closing up. It sounds dramatic, but I honestly felt like, okay, I can't do this long term. And so that's pretty much how I started meal prepping. I started, you know, saying, well, I can't eat out every day and eat food that, you know is not doing good for me. So I started bringing my lunch. And I also, and it's funny because I actually don't cook. You know, you would think, oh, you're a blogger and so you enjoy cooking, but really no. for me, it was more like, okay, I need to do this if I don't want to be sitting in the place where my patients are sitting, right? Yeah. So I kind of started bringing my lunch in. I talked my husband into it, and he got on board with us eating, you know, relatively the same stuff.
Yeah.
and that's pretty much how it started. And that was back in, let's see, when was that? Somewhere around 2012.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, between 2012, 2013. I started doing that and have stuck with it since.
That's great. So help us now with some tips, because I think a lot of us eat anything. It looks like time saving. It looks like, oh my God, if I, you know, could get my head around, it's like, this would be great in terms of not just saving time, but also money eventually. And then, like you said, you know what you're putting into your body, right? Because you're doing all of this yourself. So, how does one get into doing meal prepping? I think there's a mindset too that has to have the mindset, and then also just tips for making sure that, you know, you can stick with it and do it well.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like, you know, everything, you kind of have to center everything in why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can watch someone else's meal prep and, you know, it don't make any sense to you, right? So I think the first thing is asking yourself, you know, why do you want a meal prep to begin with? Why is it important to you? What benefits are you looking to gain, right? Because once you have that, then, you know, the 2-3 hours that you might spend on one day cooking doesn't seem, you know, overwhelming, or doesn't seem like punishment. So I always tell people, like, you know, first let's try and figure out, like, even when I'm working with clients, it's like, you know, let's really try and figure out why you want to do this, because it doesn't have to be this way, right? And then after that, then it's, you know, figuring out what time you have, you know. So some folks, you know, don't want to eat the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Right. And so if I'm setting you up to meal prep, you know, spend 3 hours cooking the same thing every day, and that's not what you want to do, then we're both failing.
Right.
So it's really figuring out, what's your lifestyle like? What are you excited about? Do you want to try? Do you want to eat something different every time? Or are you okay with repeating meals, you know? And then starting with the things that you enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you're starting something new like meal prep, it makes no sense to go try something foreign that you've never had before, and then, you know, you have the first bite and you're like, I don't like this. You know, so you just wasted money and time.
Yeah.
We don't have that. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So.
And then, I mean, I think, to my earlier point, I think that is why, like, really, that is why I was drawn to your account, like, years ago, because I was really trying to get into that mindset. And for me, like, all of the content I saw was like, you know, steamed asparagus and broccoli with, like, you know, like, you know, thing of fish. And then I tried it. I tried it, and it's like, oh my God. And even the thought of like lunch was just like, oh my God, somebody shoot me. And so that's a major point in terms of doing like what you, figuring out what you enjoy and not just following blindly.
Absolutely. You always kind of want to start with what you know. If you are a rice eater, please make rice. You know what I mean? Like, start with rice, and then, you know, you can always add one element that's different to kind of expose your taste buds or the idea of whatever that element is that you want to add. But then knowing that you have something that you're familiar with allows you to just, you know, kind of ease into it and be comfortable with it. Because the worst thing that can happen is you have all of this food in your fridge and you don't want to eat it, and you're still buying, buying food. I'm also frugal, so I'm like, look, I need to save some money. I will not be wasting my money.
Yeah.
And New York City is very expensive. Yeah. Like, you know, if you want a lunch, you're going to have at least $15 for a lunch. It adds up. So
it's not sustainable in the long term, for sure. Great. So one of the things that just in general, in terms of this idea of healthy eating, it's like, what is healthy food? Like, what should I eat? What should I put on my plate? Because the definition of healthy, especially now, it's just like so mind-blowing. Just before I got online with you, I was listening to, like, I was on Clubhouse, listening to this conversation about like keto diets and ketosis. I was just like, I was lost in terms of how technical it was being explained, in terms of, you know, how it's better for you than others. And it's like, okay, there's that, and then paleo and whole. I've been following Whole 30, and I thought I would try it, but it's a whole other thing. So it's, yeah, I mean, I follow this a Whole 30 recipe, which is really good. I like the diversity of options that it presents.
Yeah,
for sure.
I am a believer in Whole. I recommend Whole 30, especially to people that are meat eaters, right? Like, because I find that, you know, so Whole 30 is just basically 30 days of a self experiment, right? Like, you know, if you cut out certain foods, how do you feel afterwards, right? And then you can reintroduce those foods back into your system and see how you feel. Like, I love yogurt. For a very long time, I would start my day with yogurt, and I would have, like, you know, 2 cups of yogurt each day. Oh, wow. That was just like my routine. And then I did the Whole 30, and I haven't really had yogurt. Like, every once in a while, maybe. But I noticed a big difference, you know, in how I felt when I gave up yogurt.
You know, so interesting.
So I think Whole 30 is one of those things that you go at your own pace. You know, you give it your all, 30 days. And I think what is even more rewarding outside of, you know, the food itself, it's just the knowledge that you end up with at the end of it. So, you know, learning how to read labels, really paying attention to the ingredients that you're eating, how your body's feeling. You know, you get all of that at the end of your 30 days. Even before you hit those 30 days, you're starting to feel it. And so when you go back into your regular non-limited diet, you know, you'd never really go back to doing the same things, right?
Because of everything you've learned, right?
Because of everything that you've learned. So before, you might have been naive, but now that you have that information, you're like, okay, if you are eating that, it's a very, there's purpose to it. It's like, okay, I just need this satisfaction for now. But you wouldn't, you know, overindulge, because your eyes have opened up to, you know, how you feel and the rewards in, you know, paying attention to what you're putting in your body. So I usually recommend Whole 30 to folks that are like, you know, maybe, and if you think of the typical American diet, it's very, very highly processed, right? And so I, you know, and most people like meat. So, you know, I would not recommend Whole 30 to someone that's trying to go plant-based. But if you are eating meat and potatoes and you are along that typical American diet, yes, let's talk about Whole 30. You know what I mean? Like, it's really at where that person is.
Yeah, that's a couple of things. I feel like I'm about to lose my train of thought. Two quick things I thought about before.
I talk a lot. Sorry.
No. It's not you. Like, I literally, the last week, I feel like I'm just losing my mind. I forget things so quickly. Oh, my goodness. One was around... wow. I lost my train of thought.
You have to, like, stop me, because when I'm passionate about something, I would just go on, and it's like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be 5 minutes.
I remember one of them now. It was around... So, you know, you really like Whole Foods and all of that, Whole 30, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break in terms of what it truly is composed of. Uh-huh. But I wanted to touch a little bit, especially on meat alternatives, vegan diets in general, where a lot of people are doing alternatives, where they tend to be processed. Like, when I look at that stuff,
yeah,
they tend to be processed foods. And I don't know what your take is on, you know, the explosion, really, in alternative foods. Like, I almost mentioned a brand. I'm not going to do it. But, like, people trying, you know, doing alternative meats, alternative cheeses, or whatever, yeah, because they're on a specific diet or lifestyle. I wonder what your take is. Especially in the context of, like, the idea of, you know, more whole foods versus processed. Because at the end of the day, those are processed foods, at least in my mind.
I mean, they are processed foods, right? And I my approach is usually, everyone is coming into a health journey at different places, right? And so if you are such a hardcore meat person, and the idea of you giving up your meat, you know, makes you go into meat substitutes, hey, okay, that's good. But, you know, if the bigger question is, what's the end goal, right? Like, what if you're deciding that you want to give up meat, why are you doing that? And it comes back again to that why question, right? And if your intention is, you know, I'm trying to, you know, maybe it's a health reason, right?
Yeah.
And you're deciding that you want to give up meat and meat products. When you switch to all these other processed foods, just because they are vegan doesn't mean that they're healthy, right? And so if you're doing a processed meat, it's like, okay, we're looking at the salt. You know, is there very high salt content that might actually, you know, cause your blood pressure to go up? You know, is there high fat? So you're also exposing yourself to other stuff. Yeah. Now, if you are using processed meats or meat substitutes every once in a while, hey, knock yourself up, enjoy it, you know. But if that's the mainstay of your diet, you're having a processed kind of meat morning, afternoon, evening, I don't know if you're really getting the rewards. And the whole point with plant-based diets and living a vegan lifestyle is also enjoying the plethora of, like, you know, vegetables that are out there and how pleasurable those vegetables are. And so if all that's on your plate is a processed meat, you're missing the point. But every once in a while, then, hey, you know, if you're really craving that minced meat vibe, maybe you want to make some stew and you're like, I want some minced meat. Hey, go ahead and have your processed alternative means meat.
I guess the bottom line is everything in moderation, right? So
I think it really comes down to what is your goal. I think everyone is different, and where are you along your journey? You know, for some folks, you need to start with that alternative. But as you become more engaged in your plan and your goal for yourself, ultimately, you start to pull away from that, you know, from those processed meats. So I don't knock it. I say, hey, if this is what you're doing right now and that's all you can do right now, let's do it. But let's do it with the mindset of we are moving away from it at some point soon.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Good stuff. All right. So I can remember the second question I was thinking about. So
It'll come back.
Yeah, I know. It'll come back tonight, I feel like. But okay.
And then you send me a text and be like, Gina, like, this is what I want to ask you.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a good time to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk a little bit about Cameroonian food. I'm curious to learn more about the similarity, because one of the things that I've talked about a lot in the last year or so, and I'm sure people have seen, is that West African food in general is becoming quote-unquote trendy. Mm-hmm. And I like on the podcast at least to distinguish between the different kinds. And I'm always happy to have Francophone representatives on too, because I feel like we're always talking about Ghana and Nigeria. So every time I have like a Francophone representative, I really want to delve a little bit more into food from that specific country. So people have an education or a sense of that. I think Ivorian food has become pretty popular in Ghana in particular. When I go home now, you see acheke and aloko and croissant and all of that all over the place now. And so I like the co-mingling now of West African food, but really understanding each country's, I think, would be cool. So when we come back, we'll do that. And then we'll also dive into Tina's definition of what a healthy diet should be. We'll dive into Whole 30 specifically, the different aspects of it. Why, you know, the Whole 30 nutrition philosophy you were talking about, and why that, you know, is your sort of gold standard for nutrition. And then we'll wrap up, as always, with our rapid fire segment. So we'll take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll dive right back in.
This episode is brought to you by The Great Grow Along, a three-day hosted virtual garden festival connecting you with the influencers, tastemakers, and cutting-edge content of today's gardening world. The Great Grow Along will feature 40-plus sessions on topics ranging from houseplants to DIY landscaping. New plant parents and first-time gardeners will gain practical advice and creative inspiration from celebrated garden experts and industry leaders. Costing $29.95, tickets allow attendees to mix and match a wide range of sessions, or choose to follow one of the conference's six tracks, which include edible gardening, urban gardening, pollinators and plants, DIY landscaping, houseplants, and dig deeper. The Great Grow Along will take place March 19th through 21st, 2021. Sign up at greatgrowalong.com.
Okay, so we're back from our short break. And first, I want to talk about Cameroonian food. I'm curious, like, because what I've seen, and mostly what I've seen, honestly, has been on your site, because I'm now trying to think of any other Cameroonian food person that I can't think of. So I think most of what I've seen is, and I've seen, like, the, you know, the staple stuff that but I also think it's because it's not too traditional, it's because you're doing your meal prep, right? So you keep it as simple as possible, I would imagine. But that got me curious as to, like, what Cameroonian food typically is in terms of what are your staple foods, for example.
So, you know, it really just depends on where you're from. Yeah. So Cameroon, you know, I am Anglophone. I'm from the Southwest. Okay. And Cameroon is bilingual, French and English, right?
Yeah.
And so being where we are, we're very close to Nigeria. And so a lot of the foods that we have kind of overlap as well. Although we have a lot more greens and you know, fufus and things like that. You know, whenever I post a typical African meal, it's amazing to see in the comments how many people come in and tell me, oh yeah, we eat something similar. You know, and that's something that's so unifying about food, is that what you think is particular and unique just to your own country and region ends up being something that people eat in different places and call it different things. So depending on where you're from, you know, we do a lot of root vegetables. So, like, you know, things like cassava, plantains are popular. We do a lot of greens, things like eru, ndole is a popular one.
Ndole,
And then, like, my husband, because my husband is not Cameroonian, he's actually from Burundi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I always tease him because there's one Cameroonian dish, poulet déjé, which I cook often because he really likes it. And he tells me it's the thing that sealed the deal between us. And I also have like a video, YouTube video, in case anyone wants to check it out and try.
Yeah, is that the one with chicken and plantains?
And plantains, yes. Yeah. You can't go wrong. It's plantains. Yeah. Who doesn't like plantains? You know, it's like fried plantains. It's chicken in a tomato base. And tomato stew is like the beginning of every meal.
Yeah, that is the West African standard.
It sure is. It's like once you can make a tomato stew, you're good to go. You can whip up anything else after that, you know. But yeah, those are, you know, a typical ways of eating, you know, in Cameroon.
In Cameroon. Do you guys have like also like local traditional drinks? Like what fruits or spices or stuff do you use in those too?
So we have things like, fulera, which is like hibiscus, and some people put ginger, some people put pineapple.
Yeah, that's the other thing that everybody has to.
Yeah.
It's called different things.
But it really is. Like they're all, at the end of the day, I feel like it's very similar. Things that are a little bit different for us are kaki, but even then, Nigeria has moi moi, which is a little bit similar, you know, but
so that's like steamed beans then for you guys. So how is that?
It's cooked. It's like cooked in leaves. So, here in the US, we wrap it up in aluminum. But back home, you would use plantain leaves. Yeah. And so, you know, there's different kinds. You can do kaki corn, which is just like, you know, ground up corn. You put some like spinach for us is what we use here. And then, you know, you season it up with like, you know, your crayfish and, you know, pepper. And then you wrap it up in your plantain leaf and you boil it up. Okay, and you eat it with plantains.
That definitely sounds a little bit like moi moi for sure.
Yeah. Ooh. But then the difference is we have it as kaki corn. We have kaki beans. We have kaki bible, which is like cassava. So like we use a lot of our root vegetables and turn it into different things. Oh, like, you know. Like we use cassava for like gari and miyondo and bobola. Like those are all still kind of prepared the same way with that fermentation and boiling at the end, but different tastes because of the different presentations that they come with. Yeah.
Interesting. And I wonder, is it easy to find? So do you tend to cook more Cameroon, like I shouldn't say cook more Cameroon food, but in terms of finding Cameroonian food, because New York is actually a good place to talk about that, because it's I feel like everything is there. Are there places to go to find Cameroonian food, or do you tend to just make it at home?
I haven't come across a Cameroonian restaurant yet.
Yeah.
But you know, you always have your tantines, like your aunties that have like businesses and can, you know, you put an order in and stuff gets delivered to you, you know.
Yeah.
that's always a resource, you know. But the Bronx has a huge when it comes to African population and African foods. The Bronx is pretty big, you know, and then some parts of Harlem as well.
Yeah.
So you have that access, and like, and you know, Cameroonians were everywhere. So you know, I have my sister in Maryland. So I go visit, and Maryland is like, I feel like it's Africa in miniature. You know, so I go, then I get like, you know, the crayfish, the jangsang, which are like typical spices, country onions. So those little things that make a huge difference in how you cook the foods.
Okay.
I think country onions is probably a big one that is dominant in Cameroon. And I don't...
What are those?
Oh, my God. I don't know how to describe it. It's so crazy because I actually discovered it. Like, my mom's cooked with it for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And every time she comes to visit me, she brings all these little packets and I have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
And I recently did a collaboration with a fellow Cameroonian blogger, Elsie of Afro Vitality Eats.
Okay. Oh, she's Cameroonian.
She's Cameroonian. Okay. Yes. And that's another person that does excellent, you know, African cuisine, Cameroonian cuisine. And she told me about country onions. I was like, oh my God, I had that in my freezer and I had no idea what it was. Because like my mom labels stuff and I was like, okay. I have no idea. Yeah. So now I use it in like when I'm making stews. Yeah. But it just has a very distinct taste. But I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, it's just, you just have to live it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's interesting. And it's funny I think about that. And I hope we don't lose some of that stuff. I know there's a few people in the West African food space that are trying to go, you know, going back home, getting, you know, spices, trying to bring them back here and doing the education. Oh, I mean, they want to sell it, obviously, but doing also the education piece around it so that we don't forget some of the good stuff that
it's important
left back home for sure.
Yeah, and I think for me it's also different because like so I was born and raised in Cameroon, but then I went to boarding school in Kenya for like 3 years before coming to the US, right? So like my formative years where I actually started cooking for myself was I was already out of Cameroon, you know, fending for my own year. So I think some of my cooking, you know, some folks might say, oh, that's not authentic Cameroon, but it's authentic to me. It's like, you know, it's what I remember of, you know, and now I think also because my husband is from Burundi, it's important that, you know, we are still mixing that culture and, you know, bringing in the Cameroonian flavor and bringing in the Burundian flavor into the home. So I think now more than ever, I'm really spending a lot of time with my mom and trying to learn things I took for granted growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's important for sure. All right. So now let's go back to healthy eating.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we've touched on this a little bit, but oh, you know what? My second question just came, and I think perfect timing. So, you know, it's great. You know, I really wanted to understand what do we consider, what is a healthy diet? Like what, because there's all sorts of definitions, right? Even with, I'm sure Whole30 has its definition. Paleo, like I said, I was listening to a whole thing about ketosis before I came on, and you know how that works in your body. So everybody has a different angle, but like baseline, you know, if you don't want to do all the research and figure out, like, what should be on my plate on your regular basis?
Sure.
So that I know I'm having a healthy meal.
So one of the things that I talk a lot about on Instagram in my post is the idea of the plate, like my plate. And basically, I think it strips down all the noise from all the different diets, some fad diets and all of that stuff, and just narrows it right down to the basics. If you are eating, look down to your plate and ask yourself, you know, do you have your vegetables there? Do you have fiber on your plate, right? And the goal, I think, is to really push to have half of that plate be vegetables. Half of the plate.
Oh my God.
Okay. If you focus on making half of your plate vegetables, you have solved almost all your possible problems that you could encounter. Yeah. So, you know, and then whether you choose to do, like, I know with keto, it's very low carb and, you know, most people eliminate carbs altogether. I don't know. I don't really, I don't go so much for diet, like eliminating stuff completely. Yeah. I feel like all of these foods have value in our bodies. And I think, you know, ultimately, based on what's happening in your body and what conditions you're dealing with, you know, you make your choices. But generally speaking, you know, if you can focus on a quarter plate of starch, of, you know, of your carbs, which comes up to about like, you know, half a cup to 1 cup of, you know, whatever starch you choose. Yeah. A quarter plate of your protein, if you're doing animal protein, it's your fish, meat, whatever it is that you want to do, about the size of your palm, 4 ounces or so. And then...
I can hear the Africans like...
But that's the thing, right? Like even so, remember earlier I said I am a diabetes. My focus right now is in diabetes management, right? And every time I come across like an African, you know, it's the rice and the fufu, and I tell them, hey, I'm not taking that away from you. You know, part of food is identity, right? The things that we eat celebrate our identity, our ethnicities, and all of that stuff. So I'm not here to take away anything from you, but if you're going to have rice, understand that with that rice, the rice shouldn't cover your whole plate, right?
It's like the base. It's for most people, it's the like it literally covers the whole thing, and then you it's add the a whole little thing.
Yeah. You know, even when I ask them, like, oh, so what did you have yesterday? They'd be like, rice and beans, vegetables. I'm like, okay, how much of that plate was actually vegetables? You know, and people will put like, you know, maybe a couple slices of yeah. cabbage and be like, that's my vegetable. But it's like, no, don't lie to yourself. You know what I mean? So, you know, if you focus on a quarter plate starch, a quarter plate protein, and half of your plate vegetables, then you can eliminate all the noise around diets and what kind of diet to be on.
Yeah, that's a good point. And like to your point, even like when we talk, I mean, let's take rice off the table. When we talk about even things like fufu, for example, I honestly don't think it's necessarily that bad for you. Like it's complex carbs, right? So you have your cassavas, you have your plantains. It's just the portion control piece of it that I think we need to get a hang of. Otherwise, I think it's pretty nutritious. So that's the piece and that's helpful. Like I literally, as you were talking, I could picture the plate, like half of the plate, quarter. That's a good visual to think about and to remember. And one of the things that you had brought up, which we haven't talked about yet, was the difference between a plant-based, because we mentioned plant-based earlier on and a little bit about vegan diets. But what when people say plant-based versus vegan, because I think sometimes it's used interchangeably, and I don't know. Let me get your thoughts on that. Let's just say.
So, I mean, I'm not plant-based, I'm not vegan, I'm not part of that community. So maybe I am totally out of line in saying this, I don't know. But I feel like a vegan, you know, it's switched so much. Back in the day when someone said they were vegan, it wasn't so much about what they were eating, but more so a lifestyle, right? Yeah. You know, you were concerned about the environment, you were concerned about the animals, you were not using animal products in any kind of way, so there was no leather in your closet, you know. And now I feel like, you know, folks throw around vegan, I'm vegan, I'm vegan. It's like, but you're vegan, but you're wearing, you know, that print. Like, you know, so to me, it's just like, no, you're plant-based. Yeah. You're eating a plant-based diet, right? I think veganism is a lifestyle, and being plant-based really has more so to do with your diet and what, you know, you're eating.
Yeah,
so I think that's for me, that's just the main difference. It's not, it's just, you know, and you can be plant-based and still eat, you know, you can be plant-based and maybe have, I don't know, cheese. I don't know. Can you have cheese or plant-based?
Some people, I've even heard like the term plant forward, I think. Was it? I think something like plant forward or something where like you eat mostly, or maybe that's, I don't remember, but something like that where you eat most. So they will eat a little bit of meat, they'll eat a little bit of dairy, but the idea is that most of their food, most of it. So maybe I'm just throwing this out there, I don't know this as fact. So maybe instead of half of their plate, it's 3/4 of the plate, and then they have a little bit of something else.
But that just confirms what I was saying earlier, right? Like if you focus on your vegetables, like all of these so-called diets that are out there, right? One thing that they all have in common is their vegetables. You know, is a natural basis of eating from the ground and eating your vegetables. You can disagree on what kind of protein, whether it's a plant-based protein or an animal-based protein. You might disagree on whether you're, in terms of your carbohydrates, you're doing grains or no grains. But the one thing that they all agree on is the importance of having those vegetables on your plate.
Yeah, true.
You know.
True. All right. And then let's talk about Whole30. So why is it your standard? What can you explain? I think we've talked, because I've looked into it quite a bit, so I know it really well. And now as I think about it, we're probably throwing it out there and assuming everybody knows what it is. So maybe let's, one, define it, and then two, like why... it's sort of your goal. I'm saying, yeah, I think it is your gold standard for, you know,
so Whole30 isn't necessarily my gold standard. Okay. I guess my gold standard will be eat the plate.
Yeah, the plate. Yeah, exactly.
You know, focus on the plate, right? But I think for me, Whole30 is what I recommend to people when they're starting out their health, you know, on trying to get on a healthy journey, and they're coming from your typical standard American-based diet of meat and potatoes and processed foods. I think it's a easier transition for folks when you're trying to, you know, get your mind focused on what you're doing to your body and how you're maximizing the foods that are coming into your body. So the Whole30, to try and put it really simply, is, you know, a 30-day self-experiment where you're focused on eating fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, animal protein, right? And you're limiting dairy, not limiting, you're avoiding completely dairy, legumes, so beans is out, which was very painful for me. So starches are, they've also kind of modified and evolved, where now, I mean, you can do potatoes and sweet potatoes and things like that, but your typical processed starches like rice are out, right? And what else is sugars? So no processed sugars. Right. And those are all things that when you think of a healthy diet in terms of, you know, the sugars and limiting your starch and all of that, those are, you know, healthy things. Yeah. That brings you back down to the plate method of focusing on your vegetables.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So the you know, a Whole30 is just basically saying for 30 days, I am going to focus on maximizing my vegetables, right? Getting rid of, you know, processed starch, getting rid of processed foods and fake foods, right? And any kind of junk sugars. And it's pretty much sugars of, you know, honey. I think honey's out. Any sugar, like added sugar is out. Juices and stuff like that, out.
Yeah. That was the most eye-opening. Like, I've never done a full Whole30. I've dabbled and started. I've started and stopped. But that, I think that was, for me, was the most challenging. The sugar piece. Not. I actually don't eat a lot of sugar, but it's amazing how eye-opening, like, Whole30 makes you, you know, makes you become aware of, like, where you find sugar and
sugar
stuff.
Sugar and everything,
know?
Right.
It's like, whoa. And I think that was the most challenging for me in terms of, like, sticking with it consistently. Is that, okay. I was like, oh, I can do without sugar. Like, I'm fine. And then you start going down the thing and then you're like, all the sources, like, you check. When you check, I'm telling you guys, especially with juices, even things that you think are healthy.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the sugar component, and especially like the percent daily. Like, I pick up something that I think, oh, it's like an aloe vera natural drink, whatever, and it's like 65% of, like, you know, it's what, 64 grams of sugar, and I'm like, what?
Yep.
You know, it's so that for me, like, of all the things I've learned over, like, trying Whole30 on and off, the sugar piece was the most eye-opening, for sure.
Yeah, and I think it again just comes back to that question of why are you doing it?
Yeah.
Right? Like, why would you want to give up, you know, for 30 days, why would you want to take on this challenge, right? And then once you're honest with yourself about what that answer is to that question, Whole30 becomes a breeze. you know,
for sure, and yeah.
But it's not easy, and for sure, it's definitely. I mean, I've done it with my husband quite a few times now. Mm-hmm. Now I find that I don't need a full Whole30. Yeah. I just do a reset. So, like, you know, maybe I'll do like a week reset, and you know, if I have a period where I've been having like a lot of birthday celebrations or just been going off, you know, I'll do a quick reset Whole30, 10 days, and I'm back on track. My palate is like, oh yes, thank you so much. You know,
good stuff. All right, this has been so great. I've learned a lot, and it's been such a pleasure to. I've been following you, and I feel like I kind of sort of know you, and it's always great to you know, catch up with
absolutely,
you know, people and find out that, you know, they meet your expectations in terms of personality. Right?
No, it's nice. Great. Yeah, I'm so happy you reached out because this has been great. Like, I've enjoyed talking with you and just exploring all of this.
So what's next for Well and Tasty? What are you going to be doing this year in terms of education, whether it's events, collaborations that people should be aware of that they can support? Oh, it's too early. It's still too early in the year to tell.
That's also okay. Well and Tasty. I mean, I think right now, so I think I've been focusing a lot on the tasty part. So Well and Tasty is basically supposed to be a wellness platform, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like somehow it's morphed into this whole recipe developing world. And it's not a, like I said earlier that I'm not that excited about cooking. Cooking, you know, having food is an outlet for me to reach my other goals, my other personal goals, you know. So I think I kind of want to switch more into encompassing wellness as a whole. So I think I'm going to be bringing in a lot of fitness. I actually last month did a jump rope challenge, awesome. So just more around fitness, around books and sharing ideas. I really just want to develop a community of people, like-minded people, everyday folks that are just on a journey to live better, eat better, and you know, achieve their goals and just support each other as we move along. So that's pretty much what I'll be working on. Yeah.
All right, great. And then before we transition to rapid fire, can you let people know where they can find you online, so social media, website,
Sure.
keep up with your story?
Absolutely. So Well and on YouTube, actually, let me say that again. I am on Instagram and YouTube with the same name, Well and Tasty. Well is W-E-L-L and spelled out. Tasty, T-A-S-T-Y. And yeah, that's about it.
Cool, yeah.
I try to post videos. That's my goal for this year, actually, to try and see if I can keep up a schedule of at least once a week or once every other week on YouTube. But work gets busy sometimes, but I think I'll try and do that.
Cool. And I will include the links. So don't worry, I will include the links to all your social blog
awesome.
And your YouTube stuff.
Thank you so much, Yung.
People can just click on that and get right to it. So we're gonna wrap up now very quickly with our rapid fire segment. I told Tina this is like a breeze. It should not be painful at all. Okay. So first question. Morning person or night person?
Night person. Cannot wake up.
Ooh.
It's a struggle.
So this is also kind of in the same vein. Breakfast or dinner foods? Like what's
dinner foods.
Hmm.
Give me savory any day.
Yeah, savory. What would you like better? What would you prefer, I suppose? More money or more free time?
That's a tough one. I mean, if I have all this free time and no money to do anything, what's good in that? I think time. I'll take time.
Yeah, that's it's always interesting because I feel like I assume more people have said more free time than anything else, which has been interesting.
Yeah, because with the time you can create the money.
Yeah, that's I actually thought people would go the other way, like with more money they would be able to have more free time, but
nah, they've been listening to that more money more problems. We don't want that.
And then complete the sentence. This year I'm going to eat more what?
This year, I am going to eat more. Does it have to be a food item?
Yeah.
Oh, it does. Okay. I thought this was like a philosophical type of thing.
No. This is very literal.
Well, then you know where my answer is going. I'm going to eat more vegetables.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. More vegetables than you do now.
Yes, indeed. Let's make it 3/4 of the plate.
Okay. And then the last thing, which, yeah, I guess is probably a little philosophical. What would you do if you knew you could not fail?
If I knew I could not fail, wow, I would train everyone around into focusing on themselves and really pursuing their dreams. Like, I think that, you know, our success is so driven by the people around us and the community around us. And I think that is something that I try to even feed into Well and Tasty, the idea that you do not succeed anywhere by yourself, right? It really requires that community around you. So if I could really impact that community into, you know, believing in themselves, showing up for themselves, and pushing, I'm good.
Cool. That's amazing. That's a great note to end on. Thank you so much for your time, Tina. I appreciate it. We've gone a little over the time that we talked about.
No, that's totally fine.
I appreciate
fine.
You staying. I appreciate you sharing your expertise, your story. And I think it will be helpful for a lot of people, not just in, you know, this early season of, you know, trying to do better before we all fall off the wagon. But
well, if anyone falls off the wagon, I am very good in my DMs. So please, if you hit me up on Instagram and send me a message, I do try and respond. Awesome. And I would cheer you on out of that, you know.
Great.
Get you back on that wagon.
Yes. For sure. Thank you so much, Tina. This has been such a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.